Welcome back to Audio Notes. I'm Dimitri Atapin.
And I'm Hayam Park, and we are thrilled to welcome you to our survey of the second program of the Music in Menlo 2025 season, Constellations Ensemble Magic, the program titled Trio Transformations.
In the words of David Finkel, since the earliest days of the Baroque trio sonata, the combination of three instruments has produced dialogue and drama. Trio performers move seamlessly between playing as one, accompanying each other, and shining as soloists.
A trio, at its heart, is more than just three musicians on stage. It's an intricate balancing act where each voice matters equally. The clarity of the texture means that every note, every phrase truly counts.
This program brings together some of the most enduring and beloved works in the chamber repertoire, each offering a unique glimpse into the trio's transformative power. Whether it's Dvorak's charming terzetto, a piece bursting with flair all concentrated in the shimmering upper voices of the strings, or Suk's elegy, so hauntingly beautiful and intimate.
Or whether it's Brahms's deeply expressive trio for piano, clarinet, and cello, a work rich with autumnal warmth, weaving together the piano, a wind instrument, and a string instrument. Or Smetana's passionate piano trio in G minor, which closes the evening with power and intensity, transforming personal grief into cathartic musical triumph.
We begin our program with Antonín Dvořák's Terzetto in C major, opus 76, a gem of the chamber music repertoire scored for the unusual combination of two violins and viola. Dvořák was born in 1841 in a small village north of Prague, the son of an innkeeper and butcher. Though he came from humble beginnings, his exceptional musical talent was noticed and nurtured early. A key turning point in Dvorak's career came in the 1870s, when none other than Johannes Brahms, already a towering figure in European music, recognized his talent. Brahms became an important mentor and champion for Dvorak, recommending him to the prestigious publisher Simrock and helping launch his music onto the international stage. Despite their different national voices, Brahms steeped in German tradition, Dvořák infused with Czech folk spirit, the two composers shared a profound respect for each other's craftsmanship. Dvořák composed this terzetto in January 1887 over a period of just 7 days, inspired by a simple wish to make music at home with friends. This in fact explains the unusual combination. His upstairs neighbor, Josef Kruis, was one of his violin students, and Kruis's teacher, Jan Pelikan, was a professional violinist. Dvořák intended to join them at the viola. But here's the twist. When they first played the piece together, Kruis found it too challenging, so Dvořák set the terzetto aside and promptly wrote a simpler piece, the miniatures, for the same group. That leaves us today with this wonderfully crafted work, likely too difficult for the original amateur circle, but a delight for audiences and professional players alike. The terzetto unfolds in four contrasting movements, each showcasing Dvořák's lyrical gifts and his love of Czech folk character. It is not built like a traditional four-movement classical trio, but rather feels like a set of four folk-inspired character pieces so popular in the Romantic period. Each movement stands as a little, self-contained world. The first movement is even marked an introduction, and it is based on two ideas: a lyrical singing theme that unfolds gracefully, and contrasting, quick-moving episodes of flowing 16th notes. Thank you. A wonderful moment of cheekiness comes in how Dvorak connects the first movement to the second. Just when we expect a final conclusive cadence, he inserts a series of strong, almost abrupt chords, leaving the audience in bewilderment. These lead us directly into the second movement, the Larghetto. Here the mood softens into tender lyricism. The first violin sings a plaintive, heartfelt melody over a rocking accompaniment, and the viola soon joins with a beautifully warm countervoice. Midway, the music shifts into a lively, march-like character with its dotted figures. The third movement is characteristic of so many of Dvorak's scherzo-like movements. It channels his deep affection for Czech folk dances, and here we hear nimble cross rhythms and pizzicatos that seem to laugh and skip along. Both the plucking and the fiddling textures prevail. The contrasting trio section offers a lyrical smooth respite before the scherzo returns in full force. Finally, the fourth movement, Tema con Variazioni, or Theme and Variations, is strikingly unique. The theme is not a traditional melody, but rather a sequence of gestures unfolding over a pre-established harmonic pattern full of unexpected twists and turns. The movement is infused with the spirit of the folk fiddler, playful and carefree. bursting with passion, abrupt mood changes, and a parade of fleeting characters, even within individual variations. One variation in particular stands out, moderato quasi recitativo, where the violin takes on an improvisatory voice, rich with expressive, folk-inspired inflection. As the movement progresses, the virtuosity and momentum build steadily, leading to a thrilling conclusion crowned by a wonderfully characteristic folk-style chordal cadence, a final rustic and exuberant flourish. Though the terzetto was born from a domestic idea, it is far from domestic in its musical ambition. It offers us a perfect window into Dvorak's world, a blend of personal warmth, Czech spirit, melodic richness, and compositional craft. Program continues with Johannes Brahms's Trio in A minor for clarinet, cello, and piano, opus 114, a remarkable work composed in 1891 near the end of Brahms's life. Brahms, born in Hamburg in 1833, was by then firmly established as one of the great figures of the Romantic era, celebrated for his symphonies, concertos, piano music, choral works, and chamber music. Yet by the late 1880s, he was growing weary. After completing his string quintet in G major, opus 111, in 1890, he announced, very publicly, his retirement from composition, a decision that deeply saddened his friends and admirers, including his dear friend Clara Schumann. But everything changed when Brahms encountered the clarinetist Richard Mühlfeld. Mühlfeld's artistry enchanted him, opening his ears to expressive colors and possibilities in the clarinet that he had never before explored. Brahms wrote to Clara at the time, quote, "One cannot play the clarinet more beautifully than Herr Mühlfeld." Inspired and reinvigorated, Brahms came out of retirement and composed four major late works featuring the clarinet, two clarinet sonatas, a clarinet quintet, and this clarinet trio. He affectionately nicknamed Mühlfeld Fräulein Clarinette, Miss Clarinet, a testament to his deep admiration of the player and their close friendship. This episode recalls a fascinating historical parallel. Just as Brahms's musical hero Mozart had been inspired by the clarinetist Anton Stadler to compose his clarinet quintet and concerto, so too did Brahms find a new voice in the clarinet sound in the hands of Herr Mühlfeld. Scored for clarinet, cello, and piano, the trio's instrumentation was, and remains, unusual. Brahms's most direct predecessors were Mozart's Kegelstadt trio for clarinet, viola, and piano, and Beethoven's Opus 11 trio for clarinet, cello, and piano. But where Mozart and Beethoven radiate youthful, witty lightness, Brahms's trio inhabits a far more introspective world. As you listen, notice the remarkable skill with which Brahms juxtaposes the colors of the cello and clarinet. Their timbres often work in contrast, not necessarily in complement, as they might in a more conventional violin-cello-piano trio. The trio opens with a cello alone, presenting an arcing, reflective theme. A simple A minor arpeggio climbing upward, followed by a delicate descending motif. It's deceptively modest, yet it contains the entire motivical DNA that will shape the trio. At this late stage in his life, economy of means was paramount to Brahms, building vast musical cathedrals from just a few essential building blocks. Listen closely to this opening and notice how the serene arpeggio soon intensifies, heating up and accelerating into triplet arpeggios and rapid 16th note scales. This quick transformation propels the music forward, turning calm reflection into a series of dramatic rising figures shared among the instruments. Impassioned conclusion brings the opening section to a close. Pay attention to the distinctive rising and falling two-note sigh, followed by a leap-filled four-note figure. Ta-ta, 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 ta-ta. A crucial gesture that recurs throughout the work. The second theme is introduced by the cello and, in another example of Brahms' remarkable economy of means, it is essentially an inversion of the first theme. While the initial theme features an arpeggio climbing upward, this one begins with a descending arpeggio before turning around and ascending again. In the development, there is an exquisite moment of searching and rhythmic ambiguity, where Brahms masterfully intertwines scale passages exchanged between the cello and clarinet, while the piano maintains the distinctive ta-da, ta-da motif. The movement closes in an autumnal reflection, marked poco meno allegro, a little less lively. The familiar ta-da motifs take on a wary, almost chant-like character, as if fading into memory. In the final moments, a remarkable exchange of scales and arpeggios gently dissolves, bringing the music to rest on a quiet low A, settling into the warm, subdued light of an A major sunset. Set in D major, the Adagio is one of Brahms's most serene slow movements. The clarinet introduces a calm, expansive melody supported by gentle syncopations. The cello takes it up a few moments later. Listen how, although they share the same melodic line, the two worlds they create feel strikingly distinct. The clarinet brings an objective, reverential quality, while the cello responds with a warmth and intimacy that feels deeply human and personal. The third movement is in A major. It offers a change of mood with a charming waltz. The clarinet leads the dance with elegance, supported by the cello and piano. In the trio section, Brahms introduces a rustic landler in D major, a subtle nod to folk influences, before returning to the more polished waltz. The finale returns to A minor, opening with a spirited theme introduced by the cello. Brahms constructs the movement with rhythmic intricacy, syncopations, shifting accents, and constantly evolving textures, creating a web of vibrant interplay among the three instruments. There are simply too many moments to catalog, but listen how Brahms masterfully transitions between duplets, triplets, and accelerated 16th note passages. These fluid rhythmic shifts allow the music to oscillate quickly between poise, propulsion, and even moments of folk-like lilt. Also note how the dramatic ta-ta, ta-ta motif is nothing but the transformation of our favorite ta-da, ta-da idea. Speaking again of Brahms's remarkable economy of means, listen closely to the second theme of this movement. first stated by the cello, it is then repeated by the clarinet. But while the clarinet plays the theme, the cello simultaneously performs an exact inversion, an upside-down version of the same melody. It's a moment of stunning contrapuntal mastery, with Brahms having clearly learned a lesson or two from Bach. This is followed by another amazing moment in the middle of the movement, where each instrument offers fragmented two-note attempts at the opening arpeggio, tentative, searching gestures that circle around one another, until the momentum dissolves completely into a full, expectant pause. Bringing together all the thematic ideas into a single purposeful sequence, Brahms drives the music toward an assertive and resolute close. The clarinet trio is one of Brahms' most intimate and personal works, embodying both the autumnal nostalgia and inward depth of his final years. It stands as a remarkable tribute to his compositional mastery, part of a wonderful creative flowering at the close of his life.
Next on our program is Josef Suk's piano trio Elegy in D flat major, opus 23, a deeply expressive single movement work suffused with nostalgia and bittersweet beauty. Josef Suk was born in 1874 in Bohemia and studied violin and composition at the Prague Conservatory, where he became a star pupil of Antonín Dvořák. Suk's life and career were closely linked with Dvořák's. Not only was Dvořák his mentor, but Suk also married Dvořák's daughter. The two composers shared a profound artistic connection, and Suk would later become one of the leading figures of Czech music in the early 20th century, known for his intensely emotional and finely crafted works. Suk composed the Elegy in 1902 as a tribute to the Czech poet and writer Julius Zeyer, who passed away that year. In fact, the Elegy bears the subtitle of Under the Impression of Zeyer's Visegrad. Zeyer was an influential literary figure in the Czech nationalist movement, and Suk, like many of his contemporaries, deeply admired him. The piece was originally written for violin, cello, string quartet, harp, harmonium, and organ, but Suk later arranged it in this more familiar form for a piano trio. The Elegy unfolds in a single continuous movement. It opens with a gently rising and falling arching melody. The violin and cello takes turns shaping this lyrical line, while the piano provides a shimmering, bell-like accompaniment. ¶¶ As the movement unfolds, a contrasting, impassioned moment emerges, marked by angular, interrupting gestures from all three instruments. But it passes like a breeze from a distant storm. Nothing can truly disturb the gentle, unwavering sense of introspection that permeates the music. What makes this work so affecting is not only its melodic beauty, but also Suk's sensitive harmonic language. His harmonies hover and shift with subtle grace, evoking a bittersweet sense of longing, memory, and farewell. This is a work of reflection, more about emotional atmosphere than dramatic contrast, and it stands as one of Yosef Suk's most touching tributes to the cultural and artistic spirit of his time.
Bedřich Smetana was one of the most celebrated composers of the 19th century and a founding figure of Czech national music. Smetana's compositions embody the spirit of his homeland, weaving together the rich cultural heritage of Bohemia into the German-influenced language of classical music. Born in 1824 in Litomyšl, Smetana showed early musical talent, performing in public by the age of 6. He later studied in Prague, where he was influenced by the works of composers like Franz Liszt. The early part of Smetana's career is characterized by a period of search and much self-doubt. Travels, tribulations, and personal tragedy shape his story, as it took him long to gain recognition, and the blows of fate would repeatedly make him question his dedication to music and his beliefs as a composer. It was only upon returning to Prague in the 1860s, already in his 40s, that he made his most significant contributions. His opera, The Bartered Bride of 1866, became a national treasure, and his symphonic cycle, Ma Vlast, My Homeland, embodies the spirit and landscape of Bohemia. Despite facing challenges, including becoming deaf later in life, Smetana continued to compose until his death in 1884. His work laid the foundation for future generations of Czech composers, including Antonín Dvořák and Leoš Janáček, who would further champion the ideals and motives of Czech music on the world stage, and for whom the figure of Smetana would define their identity. Smetana's Piano Trio in G Minor, Opus 15, was composed in 1855. It, in fact, comes very early in the Romantic Piano Trio genre. After all, it was composed even prior to the death of Robert Schumann, when Smetana was just 31 years old and standing at the very birth of Czech music. A product of the aforementioned time of trials, it is likely to be one of the very first autobiographical chamber works, an idea the composer himself would further explore later in his life. The trio is a powerful expression of personal grief, written in the wake of Smetana's tragic loss, since in July 1854, his second daughter, Gabriela, died of tuberculosis, and a year later, his eldest daughter, Bedřiška, passed away at the age of 4. Bedřiška's death left an indelible mark on Smetana, and the trio is dedicated to her memory. It is both a tribute to her and a reflection of Smetana's profound grief and longing. The trio is structured in three movements, each of which explores different facets of sorrow, longing, and remembrance. The first movement begins with a theme that reflects the composer's emotional turmoil. The music here is heavy with sorrow, a direct outpouring of Smetana's despair. This mournful theme really sets the tone for the movement. Played by the violin alone, it is deeply passionate, full of abandon, and has an undeniable improvisatory character. Most poignantly, it shows a sense of desperate loneliness and grief. As the piano and cello join in, the music builds into a stormy, passionate exchange. The contrast between the anguish of loss and the fleeting moments of sweet reminiscence is palpable, as in the second theme, cello melody. As the music oscillates between turbulence and calm, the movement attempts to encapsulate as much emotional contrast as possible. The second movement, Allegro ma non agitato, provides a counterweight to the first. It is more lyrical, filled with witty and almost dance-like themes reminiscent of a folk tune. However, even within this seemingly fleeting music, there remains an undercurrent of melancholy. It is as if Smetana is recalling a memory of his daughter's playful spirit, yet the joy is tinged with sadness. The final movement, Presto, bursts forth with energy, drive, and a sense of resignation. This rondo-like movement is marked by an alternation of two ideas, the frantic, frightened one of high intensity, as in the opening, the lyrical, calm, reassuring, soothing, quiet sections that offer brief reprieves from the prevailing sense of urgency. As the movement progresses, the emotional weight becomes more apparent as an ominous funeral march makes its appearance. The climax of the movement and the whole trio is achieved in the final coda. The restless triplets of the opening are joined by the lyrical theme, sped up and in G major, in triumphant reconciliation. This is the resolution of the composer's inner conflict, his struggle to reconcile with his loss and his attempt to find peace. Then, for the sake of dramatic detail, there's the tiny quiet hint of the beginning returning just before the end. It breaks off in inexplicable silence, and then one of the most exciting endings in all chamber music, the triumphant scale in the piano culminating not in triplets, but in a solid G major pair of duples. When Smetana first premiered the trio in December 1855, it did not become a flat-out success. Some found it too emotional, others too complex. However, the great Franz Liszt was deeply moved by the work, arranging repeat performances and championing the work time and time again. Smetana's genius ultimately won the audience over. The work has come to be recognized as a masterpiece and has become one of Smetana's most beloved chamber works. In many ways, its emotional and personal landscape paved the way in which later generations of composers found new ideas to express their innermost feelings through music. This concludes our discussion of Music at Menlo Concert Program 2, Trio Transformations. A special thank you to Amy Cota for her immense help in procuring the audio samples, to the organizations who provided access to their catalogs, and to the artists who agreed to share their thoughts on the music. I am Dmitrya Tapin.
And I'm Haeyeon Park. Thank you so much for joining us. We can't wait to welcome you at the concert.
Audio notes are written and produced by Dmitrya Tapin and Haeyeon Park in consultation with David Finkel and Wuhan. Audio excerpts are courtesy of the following artists and organizations. Dvorak Terzetto in C Major Opus 74, performed by Arnaud Zussman and Aaron Keefe, violins, and Paul Neubauer, viola, courtesy of Music at Menlo Live. Brahms Clarinet Trio in A Minor Opus 114, performed by David Schifrin Clarinet, David Finkel Cello, and Wuhan Piano, courtesy of Artist Led. Suk Elegy for Piano, Violin, and Cello, performed by Juho Pohjonen Piano, Adam Burnett Hart Violin, and Jan Vogler Cello, courtesy of the Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center. Smetana Trio for Piano, Violin, and Cello in G Minor Opus 15, performed by Wuhan Piano, Ian Swenson Violin, and Christopher Costanza Cello, courtesy of Music at Menlo Live. Audio Notes is a copyrighted production of Music at Menlo.